You're listening to Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. There's plenty of reason to feel overwhelmed, powerless in the face of environmental and conservation challenges. But there are those leading community conversations about conservation and climate change through education and by example. One group working to that end is the Detroit Zoo. For the past 16 years, the Detroit Zoo has done strategic planning around green efforts. In fact, the Detroit Zoo has been recognized as one of the greenest zoos in the U.S. for its sustainability initiatives. Here now is the CEO of the Detroit Zoological Society, Ron Kagan. Ron, welcome.
Thank you very much. Pleasure to be here.
So, Ron, when did you know that teaching about climate change would be an important part of the mission of the Detroit Zoo?
Probably about 20 years ago. When a lot of us in the conservation community began to see some strange developments. I mean, literally, climate change had already started to affect wildlife populations. So for us, it wasn't any more a theoretical discussion. We began to realize it was a real issue and already having an impact.
What were some of those examples that you could tell us?
Well, so one of the things that was happening is we saw in Antarctica, for instance, Adelie penguins, populations were dwindling along the Antarctic Peninsula. And this became kind of a detective mystery. We know that krill, which are these sort of miniature shrimp that are in the oceans all over the world and really feed so much of aquatic life in oceans, that krill were disappearing from some of these areas, which the krill are eaten by the penguins, not just penguins, but by Adelie penguins. They were disappearing. We also were seeing Adelie penguin nests that were beginning to melt right when the chicks were hatching. And the Adelies are hardwired. They don't sort of look at a problem and go, okay, well, I guess we need to move to a colder area. These are breeding areas that they've been to for probably millions of years. So a lot of chicks were not surviving. So you begin to see things which normally in nature don't happen quickly. And by quickly, I mean over the course of several years. Normally changes, again, unless there is a meteor that hits Earth or there are a whole bunch of volcanoes that explode, you don't see changes like this happening quickly. And we saw that happening just over the course of a few years, that there were some major population changes happening.
Give us an idea of some of the initiatives that you've brought to the zoo and have the zoo doing that kind of bring this idea of climate change and conservation to the forefront. Just maybe people don't even realize they're getting kind of preached to as they go through the zoo.
Well, we do. It's interesting you use that word. We do want to avoid sounding preachy. Mm-hmm. We do want to help people understand important issues, and they are issues that are shared by humans and non-humans, non-human animals as well. So there are quite a few things that we do, and to some extent, we try to bring people on a journey with us because we've been on a journey, and we call it the Green Print Journey. Actually, people can go to our website at DetroitZoo.org and they can download our green print. They can download something that they can actually put in their wallets called Shades of Green, which gives them dozens of examples of things that we all can do in our daily lives. But we have, for instance, Science on a Sphere, which was developed by NOAA and NASA. And it shows Earth, and in both real time and accelerated time, we can show what's been happening, what's going to happen. We're only one of two zoos in the world that has it, and it's a very powerful tool because one of the things that it can do is compress time. And for humans, unless you see cause and effect immediately, people sometimes don't really understand the connection of what we do and what the impact is. And Science on a Sphere can accelerate time so that you can actually see very quickly what's been happening, for instance, to the polar ice caps, which is an obvious example of global warming. But we also have a smart flower which is, again, one of only two in the country, actually, and a very interesting solar device that tracks the sun. And it's always at maximum attack angle, so it's 40% more efficient than any solar device can be.
Hmm.
And it's right in the center on the mall, so people immediately are drawn to this. It's such an unusual device. And we explain what's going on. We explain renewable energy. We do the same with water. So we have lots and lots of water, filtered water filling stations, and we don't sell plastic water bottles at the zoo and have them for many years. We have a beautiful Michigan wetlands boardwalk, and the whole boardwalk is made out of recycled plastic bottle caps. I can go on and
on.
There are just so many different things throughout the anaerobic digester, which takes our 1 million pounds of animal waste, converts it into methane, which then powers a generator, which then powers our animal health complex. And all of these things have educational components to them, so that it's not just what we're doing, but we're explaining to our 1.4 million visitors a year, which is the key, because there are lots of great environmental organizations, but very few actually have direct contact with so many people every year. So for us, it's both a responsibility and a great opportunity to try to get people to understand issues and especially solutions.
And do you feel that the kind of messages that you've just shared with us, that the zoo is demonstrating at all times, you think that's reaching groups who might otherwise tune it out or shrug it off, the issues of climate change and conservation?
Well, it's difficult. When you do studies and evaluations of visitors, you can generally get a sense of before and after a visit, but not long after a visit. That's really tough.
Hmm.
And as we all know, all of us are bombarded with lots of messages. And in some cases, there are messages that are meant to confuse the public about climate change, which is really a tragedy because we don't have any time left. I mean, you know, during the past five mass extinction events, generally, anywhere from 65 to 85% of all species have become extinct. Now, new species evolve, but normally that recovery takes 10 to 30 million years. Obviously, humans don't have 10 to 30 million years to recover.
Sure.
And we're now in the Anthropocene, and we potentially will lose a million species before the century is out. That will take millions of years to recover from, and the question is, will we even mm-hmm. be able to withstand that?
And when you think of the severity and the implications of climate change, how do you strike a balance between these realities and educating kids in particular about climate change without scaring them?
Well, you know, to your point, we don't want to preach.
Right.
You know, people don't come to public places for that. And so this is really, it is about facts. It is about trying to focus on solutions, trying to help people understand the connectivity of all things on Earth. And there really are things that can be done. Some of this is complicated, and that is a real challenge. You know, climate science is extremely complicated. Even the climate experts have lots of challenges of explaining the differences of what methane does in the atmosphere and what CO2 does and carbon sequestration. And I mean, there are a lot of complicated elements to all of this. But I think the one thing that we're able to do is people love nature, and we try to, of course, encourage that and foster that and try to encourage people to be more thoughtful about how every step we take, literally and figuratively, can have an impact. And it can have a positive impact, but it also can have a negative impact. Kids tend to be very receptive to wanting to do positive things. And after all, they're the ones who are going to inherit Earth and whatever is left of nature. So there are many, many things that all of us can do differently, that some of them are small, and they all add up. It's a little bit like voting. People that don't vote because they say, well, my vote isn't really going to count because there are millions of people. If enough people do that, then democracy doesn't work.
If you've just joined us, I'm speaking with the CEO of the Detroit Zoological Society, Ron Kagan. You have been to Antarctica, Ron. Why did you go? And tell us what that experience was like for you. What really stuck with you from that visit?
Well, I've been to Antarctica now 6 times. And in fact, while this is anecdotal, it certainly supports the evidence. Over the course of the past 25 or 30 years, I have seen dramatic changes in Antarctica. And it is as close, I think, as you can get to traveling to another world. The scale of things, the extreme nature of the environment is incredible. But at the same time, that's one of the ways that we visually can see dramatic changes with climate, because the polar ice caps are shrinking, and they're shrinking dramatically, especially the north, but also in Antarctica. Antarctica is a place where we work with a scientist at the Palmer Station. There are 3 U.S. stations in Antarctica. He's been doing ecological research there for over 40 years, and we've been working with him now for probably 6 or 7 years. He's been documenting for the entire time that he's been there the ecological changes in Antarctica. It is still a spectacular place, but it is changing so quickly.
And I know that the state-of-the-art penguin facility at the Detroit Zoo, it's like an interactive trip to Antarctica for the folks who go there. Was it designed, Ron, with the intention of drawing people into both the positive and negative impacts of human beings on the natural world around them?
What a wonderful question, because that's exactly what we did. So, in fact, the exterior of the building evokes images of a tabular iceberg. In fact, when Bill Fraser, the scientist I was just telling you about, first saw the design, he said, "When were you at my research station?" And we said, "Well, actually, this isn't from there, but it is from Antarctica, and it's cracking in half. That's what you see." And that is evoking the concept that we are losing ice, and that is problematic. I think the other thing is that not only do we have lots of messaging in that facility, but we also at the end have opportunities for people to take action that will help the environment and do the reverse. So you're given options of, for instance, you know, if we all ate less meat, there'd be a lot less methane that goes into the atmosphere. Methane traps the heat, it's a heat blanket that's far more damaging actually than CO2. It just doesn't last as long as the atmosphere in the atmosphere. So we could dramatically reduce methane, which comes from all of the dairy industry, if we use less dairy products. There are lots of choices you can make using recycled bags and many other things, turning off lights when you leave a room. I mean, some of these things sound very small, but they all add up. And so in the Polk Center, we make sure that you are excited about Antarctica. We take you there via Sir Ernest Shackleton's ship, the Endurance, which is an incredible experience.
It is, yeah.
And he was a hero of mine from, I don't know, I think I was probably 8 when I read his story. But it's an incredible experience and gets people very, very interested. And, of course, the penguins are spectacular. And so, again, this is partly drawing people in to remind them of biophilia, the innate love of nature that humans have, and then trying to encourage them to think about what the impacts are of our daily lives and the various things we can do to help and minimize the human impact on climate change.
Looking into the future, Ron, how do you want Detroit's zoo to lead conservation efforts and climate change awareness?
Well, I'm happy to say that we've been recognized with a number of very wonderful awards, including being named the greenest zoo in the United States by the Association of Zoos and Aquariums. I think that whatever we do, and we have 4 main mission pillars, sustainability is one of them, animal welfare is another, education is another, and conservation is the other one. Whatever we do, we want to have the most impact possible. There are many things we can't and shouldn't do. It's not our expertise. So we don't focus on tropical animals because we're not in the right climate for that. In terms of sustainability, I don't know that there's anything more pressing for a conservation organization to work on. And this absolutely connects to the biodiversity challenge. And people need to understand that, you know, nature is very complicated and things really are connected. And every time we lose a species or lose a habitat, things begin to break down. I don't remember who it was who said this years ago, but you can think of it as a metaphor of a plane. And a plane can lose a whole bunch of rivets and still fly, but then it's that one last rivet, and then the whole thing unravels. I don't know if we're at a tipping point, but we're in a lot of trouble. Mm-hmm. We already know the temperatures have risen over 1.5 degrees Celsius. We're probably on track to go up as much as 3 degrees Celsius, which is enormous and will really be devastating. Climate change obviously is affecting sea levels. If all of the ice melts on Antarctica, sea levels around the world will go up 200 feet. I mean, it's kind of mind-boggling numbers.
It is, indeed. Ron, let's end on this note. What signs have you found that are encouraging, positive changes that have happened or give you hope for the future?
Well, I think, not surprisingly, the young people give us a lot of hope. I do think we aren't where we could or should be with respect to governmental policies, at least not in the U.S. I mean, there are isolated places that really have taken this very seriously, others that don't seem to really want to believe it. And I, you know, to me, the notion of what not believing facts doesn't really make any sense. But I think that it's the young people. You know, we need to encourage kids, and we need to get into schools, both in formal and informal science education. We obviously are not the only ones doing this. I think most science institutions, science museums, aquariums, zoos, all need to do a lot. We should not be strictly focused on animals. We should be really focused on the bigger picture.
Ron Kagan is the CEO of the Detroit Zoological Society, and it certainly seems like the message is individuals do have the power to affect change. You can go to DetroitZoo.org to learn more about Greenprint, Shades of Green, and so many other initiatives at the Detroit Zoo. Ron, thank you so very, very much.
My pleasure. Thank you.